Okay. We record these calls so we can put them on our website. It's brownfieldstoolbox.org. There's a lot of new callers and some great mentors and people who have been with us for quite a while. So just as I'll repeat myself, but basically want to let you know who we are. We're HMTRI. We work with EPA in a cooperative agreement to provide assistance to communities who are thinking of starting an environmental workforce development and job training program in their community. We also work with existing grantees, like we have many on the call, to help them. We use them as mentors to help new communities who may want to get started, and also to fine-tune their program. Some of the programs, these are three-year programs, and every 3 years it's time for what I call a re-up. So it's a good time to use the professional learning community to kind of brush up and see what other people are doing and what the latest thinking is, what's happening in Washington, to get an idea of what's going on. Just briefly, we've been working with environmental workforce development training since the beginning of the program. So it's 12 or 13 years now. This is an annual program. It's small. But every year, about this time, there's an RFP goes out for people who want to start programs, and then people who have really good programs or want to improve their program and continue that program. And many of you who are on the call are very familiar with the program. Those of you who are not, it's kind of designed as a startup program. It's not a big Department of Labor program. It's only funded for a few hundred thousand dollars, which is EPA gets a lot of work and the communities get a lot of benefit out of a fairly small federal program. But it is designed to leverage dollars, and it's very helpful as a supplement to programs to get an environmental workforce program started or to expand a program that's going. And it's a great opportunity to get your program off the ground and get recognized and perhaps even get into a larger budget that goes on for a long time. We've had grantees who have been with us since the beginning of the program. We've had grantees who come and go. We've had grantees who have been with us several years. So there's quite a mix. And every year, there's about 17, it depends on the funding, and I'm going to get into that in a second. There's funding that comes out of OBLR, Office of Brownfields Land Redevelopment. It's about $3 million. It could be up or down. What they do is they have their own funds, but they also get funds from other program offices within EPA, and then they will request proposals, as they're going to be doing in a few weeks. In fact, I think I'll move into news from Washington. Is Glow on the line? Bruce Glow is not on the line?
No, she isn't.
Okay. Glow works with us, and many of you are familiar with her. Sure. She comes in the morning. She's on temporary leave because her husband is ill, and she's working with him, but she's also quite involved in the program. She usually does news from Washington. Now, I'll do that. Bruce, do you have anything? Bruce is with HMTRI also. Do you have anything that you'd like to comment on before we get started?
Nothing to add. Okay. I just sent out another announcement that Joe sent me.
Okay.
So it's on the listserv.
Listserv, okay. If you're not on it, we've got two listservs. One is the PLC listserv. We have about 350 people who are specifically interested in the professional learning community. That's what PLC stands for. And we send out post-session notes. In fact, if you don't get any in the next 3 days, just send an email with your contact information to msenyu@aol.com.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again, please?
Sure. msenew @aol.com. Mm-hmm. msenew@aol.com. My name is Michael Senyu. If you get notes, post-session notes, in the next 3 days, and usually I've updated people like Corey, and I'll get contact information. We update this every day if someone wants to join. If for some reason you may be on the list and don't know it, if you get post-session notes, you're on our PLC list. that list will give you post-session notes, and it will give you maybe more announcements than you want to hear about upcoming. We do these informal conference calls every 2 weeks. Our next one will be on the 18th of November, and we send out notices on Monday and Wednesday. And Bruce also has a larger listserv, and many of you may have gotten notices about the PLC on the large listserv. If you want to get on that, that's about all things environmental, job-related. It's not specific to the PLC. Bruce, how would someone get on your bigger listserv?
I'm going to give two email addresses here. First, I'll give mine. It's B Diamond. That's B-D-I-A-M-O-N-D at EICC.edu. Or you can write to Glow Hannah, H-A-N-N-E. Her email address is G-H-A-N-N-E at E-I-C-C. I'll do that again. At EICC.edu.
And we'll put those in the post-session notes. Now, if you're on both lists, you're going to get notices from Bruce and you're going to get them from me. So just, and if you don't want to be on the list, just tell us and we'll take you off. But we do like to get the word out. So let's go to News to Washington. And one of our first things we do is try to get an update. I talked to Joe just the other day. There's going to be, of course, the RFP that many of you might be interested in. It's going to be coming out momentarily in the next week or two. There's always different potential hang-ups on the RFP. There's a lot of review processes that go on in EPA to make sure everything is right. There's also another thing that's going on, and we're going to be talking about this more after the RFP comes out. This year, RFPs from year to year are very similar. In fact, many of you can look at last year's, and I'll have the address for that if you want to get a jump on this. They're very similar, but there are some changes. This year, there's going to be an interesting change that is very unusual, and I was talking to Joe about this the other day. The way they fund this program, and we all know about budget cutbacks and everything, but OBLR, Office of Brownfields Revitalization, Land Revitalization, supports this program since the beginning with the majority of funds. These are brownfields, and this is primarily a brownfields training program to develop environmental jobs for cleanup, and particularly in brownfield communities. Other program offices in EPA have been interested in getting on board in this program. It's been very successful. Office of Chemical Awareness, Office of Water, different offices. Office of Air is not in it as of last year. But what this means is we have a basic funding stream from OBLR, but then we have some supplemental funds from other organizations. Now, what's going to be different, as I understand it, and we'll find out more in the next couple of weeks, they're going to list in the RFP the contributions from each of these other offices. So you'll know about what the concentration is. And EPA feels that they're going to be probably as a consideration in reviewing these grants, which is quite different than has ever happened before, as we understand it, is going to focus on the amount of money they have from these different groups. For example, if, say, Office of Water contributes a very small amount, they may be inclined not to award a lot of water grants. So we're going to talk more about this when it comes out, because this is all fairly new to all of us, but I just talking to Joe the other day, he said, you know, if we just get a little bit from an organization, it's hard to justify putting a lot of training dollars into a program. They're not contributing very much. So, and counter to that is someone who's putting in a lot of money, they should probably get the majority of the training activity. This is going to have a big influence on curriculum, recruitment, the concentration of what you decide to do. And we're going to talk about this. And on the 18th, we'll either talk about curriculum or recruitment. If the RFP is out, we'll probably jump over to curriculum because it's going to influence curriculum a lot. and what your focus is in your RFP. So this is probably the major development from Washington. We're going to put in some other, which we put in other notes about the ARC grants. These are the Assessment Revolving Loan Fund and cleanup grants that EPA has. They don't directly directly involve job training, but it's very important that our grantees or prospective grantees get in touch with the ARC prospective grantees, because these are the people who are going to be doing the work in your brownfields community, and you're going to want them as partners, and you may be able to work with them on doing such announcements. So there's a lot of things you're going to want to get in touch with, and we're going to include in there how to find your ARC grants. In fact, you're going to want to, anyone on the call who is thinking of submitting a proposal, it's a good idea also to contact your regional coordinator, and we do have a regional coordinator online. Before the RFP comes out, they can talk to you about your specific program, but it's important that after the RFP is announced, the federal people cannot talk to you about your specific grant. They could talk more in general about the RFP. They could have clarifications, administrative issues, but they can't talk to you personally about how to develop a sustainable program or how, you know, the nuts and bolts of your specific grant. So it's good to, it would be important to you to contact the regional coordinator, and they like to know who in their region is also going to be submitting a grant. So it's, I would say when the RFP comes out, it'll have all the contact information for all the regional coordinators. It also appears in last year's RFP. Or you could write me and we can tell you who to come and get in contact with. Rita, from Regions REIT's perspective, is this how you feel about the grantees in your region?
Yes, absolutely, I agree.
You'd like to hear from them even before or after the RFP is announced, just so you have a good idea of who in your region is going to be submitting. I think also, sometimes they can give you some good tips, and some of the regions have their own little mini conference calls like this one, or they might even have a webinar. Usually Region 4 will put on a fairly elaborate webinar. Now, this is a good time to also say that Joe Bruss, who is the and Rachel from EPA, who are putting out the RFP, will be having two webinars that will announce, and you'll get plenty of word about these webinars, and they're going to go over the entire RFP from head to toe, almost like a pre-grant meeting. What we do with the PLC is it's not a pre-grant meeting or even about the administrative. We talk about developing good practices and sustainable programs, which goes a long way when you're writing your proposal of how you may want to go about writing it, what you need or may want to include, what's important to include, where the EPA webinars and conference calls will be specifically about the RFP, how it's graded, what qualified criteria are, what the ranking criteria are, things that we don't do in this PLC. They're going to talk about the legalese and the EPA perspective, and you're going to have plenty of time to attend those. If the RFP comes out, and we'll put a schedule in the notes, if the RFP comes out in the next couple weeks, and they're waiting, one of the things that Joe said, they're waiting on money that may be contributed from these other program offices. So they're hoping to get some more money to get into the pot. And the more the money they get from other program offices, the more the grants they could award. If they don't get much money from other program offices, they may have to constrain the program and say, well, you could only focus in these specific areas. So that's one of the reasons there's a delay. They're waiting for commitments from these other program offices in addition to the administrative approval. But you're going to have plenty of time to talk to EPA about the legalese, the ranking criteria, and that type of thing. Joe is going to have two webinars. They're virtually a repeat of each other. What usually is different about those two is sometimes the questions are different. So some people like to listen to two, and if a question isn't answered in the first one, It might be answered on the second, but they go through about, it's very comprehensive. They go through about 100 slides all about the RFP. And Kathleen Curry, who has been with the program since the beginning, and Joe Rachel will be hosting that. Through this whole session, we'll be having professional learning community calls, which again, we're not EPA, we're more technical assistants, and we'll be talking about developing good strategies for developing these programs, which we've found that most of the grantees that get awards attend our PLCs and learn from other grantees, which we'll be doing later. Early on here, it's kind of a talking head, that's me, because we're trying to impart a lot of information, but as we go along, we're going to have some of our mentors, like Memphis Work, Oregon Tradeswomen. We've got some people on the call who have incredible experience, and we're going to have them talk about their programs and some of the problems they have. But right now, we're going to focus on the essentials of the of these programs that play a very important part in writing your proposal. And today, we want to talk about assessments. And I consider three types of assessments. There's community assessments, participant assessments, and labor market assessments. And it's just, you know, people think of just, you got to do a labor market assessment, and they go and get some just general demographic information, and that suffices. It does not suffice. It is not the way to do a good assessment. I think one of the most important things is the community assessment. And this is going to determine where you're going to be training, what your target group's going to be, what kind of people are you going to be training. It's extremely important, and it's a first step. I'm going to put in the website for the EJ screening tool, which was just developed this fall. It's now online. Just last month, they released it to the public. It is an incredible tool. It goes down to demographics of about a few thousand people, divides the entire country up, and it gives you demographic information, educational information, language. It tells you where the brownfields are. It tells you where the Superfund sites are. And in this time before the RFP comes out, I highly recommend you go to the EJ screening tool. And I'll put in the notes the exact address, but you could Google EJ screening tool. It's an EPA tool. And just get in there and start playing around with it. But you could put in your zip code, and it'll tell you everything about your zip code. The proximity to priority sites, the demographics, the education level, the income level. It'll get you extremely all of the information and fairly current. They've got 2010 American Community Survey. They've got, that's 2012 data. They have 2010 data and 2000 census data. That will give you some strong demographic information and what kind of sites you have in your community. But that's not going to be enough. You need to get into the neighborhood, and you need to find out what kind of neighborhood you're going to be dealing with, who are the major community groups, who's living there, what are the employment figures in their neighborhood. You need to find out, are these communities near jobs? What kind of transportation is near these communities? A very important part of the EPA evaluation is called special factors. Are there special factors in this community? For example, did a textile plant close last year and creating high unemployment in this community? Are there a large number of underserved people in this community? Does it happen to be an ex-offender, a highly populated community? What are going to be the specifics? And the question is, how do you get that information? And this is going to lead into working with partners, which we talked about last week. You're going to be able to do a lot of things at once. You establish partnerships and develop stakeholders and also do your needs assessment. And think of this all as one great big puzzle. If you you have to select, you're going to have to select the target community. It's just not like I'm going to do everything. I'm going to focus on this particular community. It has special needs. It has a special population. It has these problems with the environment. This is why it's underserved. So you want very specific information that you could put in your proposal. Why are you serving that community? And the reason it's so important is you're going to have to develop your partnerships in that community. Not, you don't want a partnership with someone that's in the suburbs somewhere that your participants can't get to, that has no relationship to the community you're working in. So you're going to have to start looking at that. So this community assessment is quite important in developing your overall plan. The second type of assessment that I think is very important is what I call a participant assessment. And that kind of links into the community assessment. What kind of target group, who are you going to be training? Are you going to be training ex-offenders? Are you going to be doing, as April's doing, Oregon Tradeswomen? They have an awesome program. April's got, and we'll have her on talking specifically about women in non-traditional trades. But they do an unbelievable job in targeting a very specific group of women in non-traditional trades. We have the Fortune Society, ex-offenders, focus highly on ex-offenders. But we have a lot of them that are working with multiple. They'll have a mix of people, for example, in the Cypress Mandela Training Center in Oakland. They have many women, perhaps, and sometimes the majority of women in there. They have ex-offenders. They have people from the neighborhood. So they have defined their scope of participation as fairly broad, coming from a specific community. But it's interesting. Theirs is focused on construction trades that migrate into environmental trades. So their participant group are people who start off in construction, learning construction, and then they take the cream of the crop. They use the construction training as a screening tool to take the best of those and suggest you want to also learn environmental trades. And they'll take them and then run them through another course, which is the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program. So their participant group is quite different than many. So there's all these types of participant groups that you may not have been aware of, and you may want to start thinking about that. And as I just said, that kind of feeds back into your community assessment. If you're going to be working in a community, and you're working, say, through religious organizations in that community, they may say, well, we have a real issue with women who are battered women or women who are unable to support themselves or ex-offenders, and our community has a real issue with this. You may decide to focus on that particular group. And that's going to influence your partners. It's going to influence the whole rest. It's going to influence your curriculum, which we'll be talking about at a future PLC. You're also going to have to decide what kind of disparities you can accept in your program, whether age disparities or educational disparities. You may focus on, we have groups, particularly more rural groups, that for example, people have not been in a classroom in 20, 30 years. They're unemployed. They need help. But they have not cracked a book in 20 years, and they may be in a classroom with kids who just got out of high school. And so you're going to have to think about, are you going to have to do remedial education? Are you going to allow these educational disparities, particularly if you're doing some environmental training that requires math and verbal skills and writing skills? You're going to have to make an early decision, and we'll be talking about recruitment strategies in one of these next PLCs that is going to have to take in consideration. What kind of group are you going to have? You're going to have 20 people in a classroom. What kind of educational disparities, demographic disparities, age disparities, cultural disparities are you going to have, or are you going to have all of them, or are you going to try to narrow this in a specific way? You're going to also have to look at your employer base, and we're going to get into labor market assessment in just a second, but you have to talk to your employers and see what kind of jobs are in your community. There may be jobs that are not suited for certain groups. If these jobs require, for example, working with kids or working in a house, you may have to have special considerations with the people that you're allowing into the program. Almost many of our programs, of course, are drug-free. Some do. The employers will not hire people who are not drug-free, but you may be in a community where drugs are legal, where marijuana, and this is particularly one that was brought up by Art in Oakland, you can go out anywhere and get marijuana, but the employers won't hire those people. So you're telling your participants you cannot be on marijuana, but then they're saying, well, I could walk across the street and it's legal. So you're going to have to work also bringing in, do this assessment of your employers. If you're working with certain trades, for example, construction trades, they seem to be very amicable and interested in hiring ex-offenders. Ex-offenders are great construction workers. Many people that have construction companies are ex-offenders. And we find that they're very easy to place. Some of our Fortune Society says this is not an obstacle. But you may be in a community where your employers are very adamant. We can't have people with either drug record or criminal record or whatever. And that may or may not be right, but you're going to have to adjust your program in your recruitment strategies that says we need to place these people. We got to work backwards. We got to be able to place the individuals. We see very few barriers for women entering this occupation. I think Oregon tradeswomen, which we'll talk to, find that women could do anything men can do. There may be some weight limits in certain cases, but even that, we find that they perform very well in environmental occupations, and many of our grantees are doing a lot of excellent work with women in environmental trades. So this all comes into this participant assessment that I call it, and it's going to affect your curriculum, it's going to have to be tailored to your participant group, your employers that you're going to be using, and any kind of disparities you might have. The last thing that in terms of assessments that we want to talk about is labor market assessments. This is the one everyone thinks about. The purpose of this program is to place people. So you need employers. And how do we do this? And in fact, we had a question 2 PLCs ago about a community college that they were concerned about this program because their general labor market assessments did not show a big demand for environmental workers. Well, environmental workers is not an occupational title that you could go to the Department of Labor and just look up something. It doesn't work that way because there are so many occupational titles in the environmental arena. It crosses 20 or 30 different occupations. So it's there's construction workers, environmental workers, there's deconstruction, there's welders who need asbestos training, there's painters who need lead training. So you've got multiple occupations, and they can't, how do you define, you could develop the need for a painter, but you can't ferret out the painter that has to have lead and confined space training before he can do the job. But there is a big demand in that community for those people. Pesticide workers would be perhaps the same thing. asbestos workers. There may be welders, but there might be welders who are working on refineries, and they need the asbestos training. All of the workers, anyone who goes on a waste site has to have 1910-120 HAZWOPR. So there may be many trades, but they have to have the EPA courses and the OSHA courses, the training that you're providing as part of your program, before they can even get on the site. We've had communities where we call it it's a reverse pyramid, where there might be someone in a university, this is in the community college level, where they're doing some high-level environmental work, but they can't even go on the site, so they have to go over to the community college and get HAZWOPR. They may be a researcher. This happened at the University of Michigan. They're doing work with hazardous materials and some fairly high-level remediation research, but they can't go on a site until they've had HAZWOPR. So there are many occupations that are not occupations that you may think of that need this training. Transportation, you may be transporting hazardous materials. You're going to have specific training. You may be a highway worker and you need specific training. So this makes your labor market assessment very difficult and not something you can just go and get out of a Department of Labor database. So what do you do? Well, you do a couple things. You go into the Office of Economic Development, which you're going to have to do anyway, the mayor's office, and you start talking to them about occupational jobs, what kind of cleanup, what kind of construction and deconstruction is going to be occurring in the city. If there's deconstruction, like there is in Detroit, which someone's on the call, tremendous amount of jobs in deconstruction. Well, Detroit is loaded with lead and asbestos, and all those people need training. So you've got a tremendous need for people with HAZWOPR, lead and asbestos training in Detroit. But those will never show up in your general occupation. So what you need to do is find out from contractors and from Mayor's Office of Economic Development, perhaps the WIB, Workforce Investment Board, may have better information on local demand for painters and lead that require lead training, or pesticide applicators or wastewater operators that you could demonstrate. You would also want to investigate what EPA has to offer in terms of what kind of brownfields do you have in your community, and we'll have the how you access the brownfield, the EPA brownfields fact sheets. But you definitely want to go into the EPA databases. And I'm going back to this EJ screening tool. It'll tell you what the proximity of Superfund sites are and brownfield sites. And you're going to want to talk to the ARC grants. These are the assessment, cleanup, and revolving loan funds, because this money is granted to EPA to actually clean up these neighborhoods. And if you're linked in as a partner to one of the grantees, they're going to need cleanup people. And you can work with the mayor's office, and you can work with the contractors to say, our grantees are going to be hired by these people. And in our session, when we talk about placement, we have first hire agreements that we use and various strategies in taking our grantees and placing them. And this is going to be really important in establishing what the best kind of labor market assessment is, to give those general demographics that I talk about, but then say, I've got five employers in my community, and this is what they do, and they want our people, and they want this kind of training, and this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to train them. And they have committed not to hire our people, but to look at our people, because they want people with $5,000 worth of certifications that we're providing our people. And so when you get to writing these grants, this is the kind of thing that EPA is looking for. Very specific. Who's going to hire the people we're graduating? What kind of training do they need? We're going to be providing that training. And that all goes into this whole labor market assessment. So having said all this, you could see the large amount of information you're going to have to gather in the coming months. And that's why we really ask people to get started real early on this whole assessment issue. If you do your assessment right, you're going to be able to develop a database of potential employers. If you do a good labor market assessment, you're going to have a Rolodex of employers who will not only participate in your program, they may be guest speakers, they're going to be on your advisory board, they're going to be potential partners, they may give you equipment to use, they're going to hire your people. And they're going to provide you with a labor market assessment because they're going to say, we'll look at your people. And the more they bond with your program, the more likely they're going to hire your people. So when you're doing these assessments, and one of the chicken and egg things that people bring up is, I'm just proposing this grant. And if I go to City Hall and tell them, you want me to tell City Hall we're going to apply for the grant? You want me to go to employers and set up these relationships? What if I don't get the grant? Well, what you want to do is you want to go to City Hall and say, we're proposing this grant. You want to go to your employers and say, we're proposing this. And if you don't get it this year, we're going to propose it next year. But the fact is, you're going to propose this. You're not saying, this is something we're going to do absolutely, that this is a done deal. You're going to propose this. And it gives you, you're not committing yourself to anything. But you're getting these people on board. And in fact, if we get the grant, and if we don't get the grant, we're going to keep working on this. Or we may get money from someone else. And often what happens is we've had people who don't get the EPA money, but someone else wants to fund them because it's such a good idea. So don't be afraid of not necessarily committing that you're going to do this, but commit that you're planning on submitting this grant. Proposal. And you want to do this in all of these assessments I just talked about, whether it's community assessment or the participant assessment or the labor market assessment. And that'll get you a long way. So, I've spoken a little more than I like to, but anyone have any comments on this or something they'd like to contribute regarding doing these assessments?
Michael, this is Paul Connor from Tetra Tech. I'm working with Groundwork BC and Dennis Chestnut, and we're starting to work on a grant application. Are there samples of survey instruments that you would recommend to send to potential employers? And I'm thinking primarily of the contracting community.
We've addressed that, and the survey instruments that are out there are usually too general. What BEST is a BEST survey instrument is one that's tailored to your community that says, we're considering developing an environmental worker training, and we're also considering the following types of courses. Would someone with these certifications, which would be the curriculum you're thinking, and everyone uses a different curriculum, but you might include lead, asbestos, water, wastewater, pesticide. Would any of these things be of interest if you had someone and of course the demographics change in this community? And you might send that out to a group of people. Generally, we find that if you send out these massive assessment instruments, surveys, what comes back isn't really all that applicable or meaningful, unless if you could target very specific, say contractors that you know are in the environmental business. Now with Tetra Tech, you know who the players are, so you may send out a survey instrument that would say, you know, would you consider hiring someone and explain what your program is? Would you consider hiring them if they had these certifications? And then if they get a response that says yes, that does give you a couple of things. It gives you a contact list that when you get going here, you could contact them and get more involved in the program. That's probably your best kind of survey instrument.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Any other questions regarding assessments? We'll be coming back to these things. If you have any questions, you can write me, and we'll discuss. Mm-hmm.
I actually have a question about these. I'm with the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission, and we were working with three communities on a coalition, Brownfield Coalition, And do you have any suggestions on whether the assessment information, can we aggregate it across the three communities, or is it better to keep the three cities separately? I think we ran into some trouble when we had to keep it all separate because of the page limits in here. Now you're talking about three different cities and three different...
Right.
They're all, you know, adjacent cities,
right.
So it's all kind of one big population pool of both labor and employers.
Yeah, we have had communities that do join together, the more regional and the larger communities. They're not targeting a specific. In your larger urban areas, they may be targeting a very specific community. As you get rural, you don't have that concentration. If you're in Boston or you're in San Francisco, Chicago, New York, there you might be working in a certain part of Brooklyn, you know, like St. Nick's Alliance. It's a community that they're working in, or Hunter's Point in San Francisco. In your case, you're more rural, so you do have to go to this larger community. And so what you want to do is you want to describe that community as it is kind of one target group, and you want to say, here's the employment issue, there are these brownfields in these locations in this community of three cities. There is a need. Now, you have to make sure that, you know, when you develop that your participants could get to these cities.
Rural. I'm in Gary.
Oh, Gary. Okay. Well, you're in a very large area. So, you know, it's something that, although, you know, Gary it's an interesting community. You've got special issues in Gary in terms of, in fact, we worked with Mary Mulligan for quite a while, and you've got very specific issues regarding plant closures, for example, and you might want to say, you know, we're focusing on these displaced people from these plant closures, and here's the unemployment, the high unemployment in this community we're targeting, and in your case, that's something that would work. Now, I wouldn't consider all of Indiana, for example, or I wouldn't even consider Northwest Indiana, because you've got affluent communities and you've got communities that are tremendously underserved. So you want to focus on those underserved portions of those specific communities in Gary.
Right. Well, what we're trying to do is, so Gary, Hammond, East Chicago represent our environmental justice communities.
Right.
But keeping the statistics and everything separate for the three cities.
Yeah, tell them these are your target populations, this city, this city, this city. You're going to be recruiting from each of those groups. I would go to the EJ screening tool also and identify the high degree of environmental degradation, the special impacts as a result of plant closures, which was a big impact last round. Mm-hmm. I think you got the right
Thank
idea.
You.
Anyone else about doing these assessments or defining your groups? We'll have plenty of time to talk about these in future PLCs, but wanted to get you started. Probably before the next PLC, I'm hoping the RFP will come out and we can talk more specifically about this curriculum and how they're going to be reviewing these proposals, because this is quite new. One of the things that Joe suggested is, you know, if wastewater, there's lots of wastewater jobs, but if the Office of Water Management does not want to contribute a whole lot to the program, they obviously couldn't give all the grants to wastewater programs. So that may impact a lot on your curriculum that you deliver. But we'll talk about that when we know more about it.
Okay.
Well, we'd like to keep these to half hour, which you've gone over, but I'll send out post-session notes, which will elaborate and give you some websites to go to. And I would say if you do anything, if you could get familiar with that EJ screening tool, I think you might find that really helpful in the next week or two. So, okay, well, thank you, everybody. And
thank you.
We'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.